You're listening to Thursday Night Tailgate with Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari, where NFL legends live on. Back to you, boys.
All right, now joining us is the sixth inductee into our guest Hall of Fame class tonight, and that is former Texas Rangers, Yankees, and Braves outfielder Billy Sample. This is Billy's ninth appearance on the show, dating back to February of 2013. Billy played in the major leagues from 1978 to 1986, singled on the very first pitch he saw in the major leagues back in 78 off of Jerry Augustine of the Milwaukee Brewers. In 1983, Billy finished fifth in the American League in stolen bases, batted .274 with a .331 on-base percentage and a .732 OPS. He was the 10th toughest player to strike out that season, and he was third in fielding percentage among left fielders. In all, Billy played in 826 games, had just under 2,800 plate appearances with 46 home runs, 230 RBIs, and a career batting average of .272, stole 98 bases as well. What you may not know about Billy is he was a star wide receiver in high school and scored the winning touchdown in the 1971 state AAA quarterfinals game. His high school, Andrew Lewis, advanced to the state championship that year where they lost to T.C. Williams High School. That was the game depicted in the movie Remember the Titans. Billy is also an accomplished screenwriter, producer, and broadcaster. After his playing days, he helped broadcast games for the Braves, Mariners, and Angels. He wrote and produced the movie Reunion 108, which is a satirical comedy with a baseball backdrop. You can find it available as a DVD on Amazon.com. He's written a book titled A Year in Pinstripes and Then Some about his one season with the Yankees, and that is also available on Amazon.com. And oh, by the way, it's 5-star rated. He's also done stand-up comedy because he's just that talented. He's been a great friend, and he's made every segment that he's joined us so much fun. So tonight, we are honored to induct him into our guest Hall of Fame. Hey, Billy, Chris, and Bob, thank you so much for being so wonderful to us over the last several years.
I tell you what, Chris, I want to come back just to hear you read that introduction, because it's not going to get much better than that for me. I'm old now, and nobody wants
to keep
going. Stories, and you've added some validity to that. Thank you very much. And hearing Willie, following Willie, is kind of tough, because he's got these great moralistic stories, and I'm calling you from the bowels of the basement of one of my watering holes in New York City. So take that.
No doubt.
You're allowed to do it outside, don't you? To Chris and Bob. Okay, I found a place.
Well, we appreciate it, Billy. And like I mentioned a moment ago, you're a pretty good wide receiver in high school. So talk about why you decided to play baseball instead of football.
Well, if I'd been as big as my youngest son, who's 6'3" and about 235, I think I would have played football. I think I enjoyed football a little better, but at age 15, I figured I wasn't going to get much bigger than 5'9", and, I don't know, 175, 180, and that was long before the short, quick wide receivers like the Mark Dupers and the Mark Claytons and the Stephen Bakers, and I wasn't that quick anyway. Nat Moore, I guess, would be in that group, too. And in fact, I met Nat Moore somewhere, and I looked at him, and he could scratch a match on his forearm, and I think, okay, well, I think I made a good decision. And but I really liked football. I thought actually after my junior year I was going to go to the University of Virginia and play football and baseball, and it just never happened. I was a second team All-State wide receiver my senior year, but I have to admit I had All-State quarterback and Eddie Joyce Jr. and he made life easy for a lot of us. His father was a coach, so we threw the ball about 50% of the time, so that might have skewed my talent as well. But I think in the end I made a good choice. I realized at about 15 I wasn't going to get much bigger than that, and I didn't know if I could take the hit that they take now. Although, now you can hardly hit anybody, so maybe if I'd have been born a little younger, I would have played football. But I kind of played baseball with a football mentality. I don't think I played like Kirk Gibson. I think Kirk probably played it so hard that he ended up hurting himself quite a bit, because I don't think you can play baseball with the intensity over 162 games that he played it, but I kind of played a little bit like that, and I took my bruises, and I have the arthritis to prove it and some of the aches and pains, but it was fun. I don't have any regrets. I guess we all would have liked to have an at-bat or two over, or a pitcher, like to have a pitch or two over, but for the most part, I think I gave you what I brought to the ballpark that day.
Billy, in the trailer for your movie, Reunion 108, you say that they told you to write about what you knew, and then boom, out popped that movie. And it isn't exactly the wholesome family baseball movie. Is the movie based on what your life was really like as you were coming up through the minor leagues and playing in the major leagues?
A lot of those stories were mine. I think of the, let's say, roughly 14 flashback scenes. All of them had some element of truth in them. The last funeral home scene probably had the least amount, but that was still based on something that happened in the movie. I would say about 4 of those 14 were personal stories. I'm not telling which one. But they were mine, and it is a little rough. I think if I do another one, if I'm fortunate enough to do another one, I'll tone it down a little bit so that I can have a wider audience. But for the most part, it did what I wanted it to do, and I don't have any regrets about that. And I think it was, I enjoyed it. But it's not, I tell people that sometimes when I look back on it, I've had women walk out of the theater. And then I've had women really love it. So it's kind of one of those that you have to go in with a certain mindset. But there's a lot of education, I think, in the movie, not just about baseball, but about life in general. And some of it's very satirical, but that's what I was shooting for. I wrote the script, and I submitted it to the Hoboken Film Festival. It took top honors. I said, well, let me see if I can produce it. Somebody should have shot me. But in the end, I'm glad I did it because it would have always been on my bucket if I had.
Bob, questions for Billy?
Great to have you back, Billy, and congrats on the honor. It's a pleasure.
Oh, thank you. Great. Thank you, yeah. I'm waiting on Saturday Night Live now. See how many times I can be on.
It's great having you. And I was doing a little looking at your stats today, Billy, and I don't think people realize how good of a contact hitter you were. You struck out, this is fascinating to me, you struck out 230 times in your career when guys these days are doing that almost on a yearly basis. And I was just wondering, were you cognizant back in the day, Billy, about not striking out? Was it embarrassing? I mean, tell us all about that because it's a fascinating stat.
Oh, that's a great question, Bob. I think back in the day, strikeouts, or the lack thereof, meant more than it does today. I think people are concerned about launch angles, and the ball has a little more travel in it now. It's a little harder, so you get rewarded more from forgetting about the strikeout when you make contact. Back in the day, if you struck out, I couldn't strike out. I don't know. I think I struck out roughly about once every 13, 14 times, 14 plate appearances. Nowadays, if I had struck out once every 7 plate appearances, I never could have gotten out of AAA ball. So it's a little different. There's a greater correlation between offense and revenue. And so they do what they can to enhance the offense. So they will bypass on the strikeouts in order to hit more home runs. Because I guess this generation grew up with the bells and whistles of hitting home runs. But back in the day, no. In fact, we had ballparks. And I remember Tom Poquette, who played most of his career with Kansas City, and he was traded over to Texas. It seemed like everybody played in Texas at least for a little time. And Tom hit a ball that he normally would get a base hit in Kansas City. He sort of dropped a hit on it, sort of found that Tony Gwynn 5.5 hole and get a base hit. Well, he did that in Arlington in one of those days where the ball just doesn't carry and the ball just stayed up. The tough part about Arlington was back in those days is that, especially in right center field, you could crush the ball and it wouldn't go anywhere and it wouldn't sink. So you almost had to force the ball and force your top hand on the ball more to make the ball sink. Unless you're somebody like Al Oliver, a great hitter like that, who could hit line drives and could force the ball down. But back in those days, it just wasn't done to enhance the offense. So I understand it. I applaud them for doing what they feel like they need to do, and offense is important in all the sports. Everybody's trying to change to enhance the offense. But back in the day, I'd struck out twice as many times as I had. I just never would have gotten out of the minor league.
And Billy, I got to get your ideas about the major league shifts that are going on, and the critics and the agents and the players that are complaining about it. Am I wrong, Billy, or is this just, is it strategy? It's just, if you can't beat a shift, if you can't hit a ball in a 20-yard area, should you be a major leaguer? I mean, we can go a lot of areas like this, but you see a lot of complaining going on.
Wow. Hit the ball.
That's what I said.
Geez, my goodness gracious. I hope they don't alter the way the defense is played. I don't know what they will do. Again, they're trying to enhance the offense, so they'll probably try to modify it in some way. But yeah, why not drop a bunt? If somebody's going to play the shift on you, it's a tied game in the seventh, drop a bunt the other way. Not that difficult. At least, well, it depends. Right? But I'm with you. Just hit the ball the other way. Or if the situation dictates, just drop a bunt that way and you're on base center, then go ahead and run. I don't know. They were trying to shift when Lou Boudreau was trying on Ted Williams back in the 1940s. So it didn't bother Ted. Although, I hear he looked at the umpire and said, is that legal? I had the opportunity one time to interview Ted for a TV show that was in New York, the Sports Channel way back in the day. And so we're going, and it's a video interview that I can't find. I don't know what the producer did with the interview, but somewhere in the course of things, Ted probably figured, I knew how scientific Ted was. If the sun came out and on a cloudy day, he would feign something in his eye so that his pupils and cornea would dilate to the different darkness and light. I knew all that kind of stuff. And so at some point, Ted must have figured out I knew what I was talking about. I don't know if he knew that I played at the time. I retired maybe 3 or 4 years at the time. And then he went from, I don't know, 301 class to postgraduate class. And you could probably see in my eyes that I didn't quite follow where he was going with it. So we wrapped up the interview. It was probably 10 minutes. It was long enough. On my way home, driving, I thought, oh, that's what he meant. It took me that long to realize what he was talking about because, hey, Billy hadn't been there. I didn't know that way. And I told Tom Grieve later, Tom Grieve was really classy, got a long time Washington Senator and a Texas Ranger and broadcaster for a long period of time. And Tag, his nickname, Tag said, yeah, he said the same to us too. About talking over their head for a time, and then you try to figure it out because you don't know. And I also heard that Ted said for the pitchers, they would, if they gave up a home run and Ted came out to the mound, then tell him it was on a slider. Always say it was on a slider because that was the pitch that gave Ted the toughest spot was the slider.
Billy, just a couple of more before we let you go. And you know I'm from Pittsburgh and a big Pirates fan and spent my summers at Three River Stadium watching the Pirates of those 1970s teams. And we've talked about your relationship with Al Oliver before. And Al is a great friend of the show. But you also had three more former Pirates on those Rangers teams. Guys like Richie Zisk, Doc Medich, and Doc Ellis, plus Kurt Bavakwa, who spent some time in Pittsburgh as well. And Willie Stargell. I know you spent some time with in your days in Atlanta, and he was my hero growing up. Talk about what you remember about all of those guys.
What a class act. Down-to-earth class. My goodness. I had Willie. He was the first base coach when Chuck Tanner brought his coaching staff to Atlanta in 1986, which was my final year in the big leagues. Oh, my goodness. He was like the Pied Piper to me because I would just follow and hang on his every word. Well, let's see. Doc Medich introduced me to an agent that directed me into a project tax shelter that had me on the IRS about $500,000. Okay, but Doc and I are still good. Doc Ellis was, oh my, Doc loved me. I don't know why Doc Ellis, he really liked me. I was there for, in fact, when Doc was traded from the Rangers to the Mets, he got the phone call, and this is before cell phones. Many years before cell phones, and he got the phone call. I guess to go up to the front office to get the detail. He turned to the clubhouse and said, "You going with me, Sample?" And I'm like, "No, Doc, I'm good. I'm good. You go." And by the way, you're the treasurer for our kangaroo court. Can you leave the money this time? But yeah, it was nice. In fact, Doc was the first person that spoke to me when I was called up to the big leagues. When I was called up to the big leagues and the Rangers were 5.5 games out in Milwaukee, I walk into the clubhouse. It's one of those where I was playing in Tucson. You fly from Tucson to Phoenix, Phoenix to Chicago, Chicago to Milwaukee. By the time you're in Milwaukee, you're just dead. So I walked into the clubhouse and I see that I'm in the starting lineup, and Sample leading off. And I thought, okay, well, that's fine. I didn't think I was going to play that soon, but that's okay. But the scary part was that it had Sample 4, and meaning I was playing second base. And I think, till this day, I still have the Texas League record for most errors by second base. I think I burned my glove, infield glove, actually, so I didn't really have one. And nobody told me anything. In fact, you mentioned Richie Zitt. Richie came over and sort of, in a vuncular way, he said, it's just like AAA, meaning don't get excited about it. So I was leading off the game, and maybe 7 minutes before the game, Billy Hunter, the manager, came to me explaining why I was penciled in at second base. They felt that Bump Will switch hitting second base and was struggling a little bit from his right side, so they wanted to give him one less at bat from the right side. I don't know if that's even legal to do nowadays, but so I did. First pitch from Augustine, I singled the right center off the glove of a diving Sixto Lescano, and I'm on first base with a chest-out heading and grin on my face, and here comes the Bump to pinch run for me. My day is over, folks. All right, you guys are good.
That's a great story. And I love every time you tell that one.
Al Oliver, you had to hit, because he would embarrass you to hit so well and so hard and line drives all the time. One time, mm-hmm. Scoot came to me after I pushed the ball over the first baseman's head for an RBI double, and he said, "How can a man get hit like that?" And I'm thinking to myself, "Scoot, I've already penciled in those hits." I need those hits. Hit line drives like you at people. I need those hits. And after he said it to me, I didn't get any more of those hits. Shut up, Scoop. But he was a tremendous hitter. In fact, one day in Detroit, he went, I think it was 6-for-9 in a doubleheader. 4 homers, a double, and a triple. And I think one of the hardest balls he hit was an out. you feel like you need to pay admission. They're like, wow, that's really special.
No doubt.
He got 50 to see it off. He was crazy. My goodness, could he hit? When that right foot drop, bad head, it seemed to follow. Oh.
Billy, what are you doing now? Remind our listeners, what's going on with you?
Well, I'm still trying to write a little bit. I've got the book and the movie, both as you alluded to earlier, and thank you very much, Chris, on Amazon. I had updated the book this summer. I included some things that went on earlier this year, actually. So I'm pleased about that, and just sit back and watch the grandkids now. The 5-year-old Kai, or 6-year-old Kai, I think now, he's dropping bad head that makes his granddad feel proud. I don't say anything. He takes the game hard. Sounds like his granddad. He takes the game hard, takes it home. At some point, maybe he'll ease off that a little bit with age. But he's got some talent, but and not only from his granddad, my goodness, his mother threw the javelin at the University of Rhode Island. His dad played Division III football at Ashland, Ohio. So he's got good genetics.
Well, Billy, thank you for continuing to come back and now being a wonderful part of our guest Hall of Fame. Bob and I really appreciate you. Every time you join us, the segment is so much fun. We look forward to having you back on the show again, hopefully real soon.
Well, Chris, you know I'm honored. So thank you very much, and thank you for the induction.
Billy, take care. All the best to you and your family, and we look forward to catching up with you again real soon.
Talk soon.
Okay, Chris. All right. Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Bob.
That is former Texas Rangers, Yankees, and Braves outfielder Billy Sample. And, Bob, Billy's always so fantastic. You're never quite sure where he's going to go with the answers to the questions and that sort of thing, but it's always fun sort of following him because he makes the segment so much fun every time.
He's such an educated guy, Chris, and such a great speaker, and the stories he has. I mean, we had him up on the TV side here and talking about his days down in Texas with Frank Lucchese and some of the guys he mentioned, and there's never a shortage. And, of course, his 1 year in New York was very memorable. So, honored to know him. He's been so kind to us over the years, and, again, it's a blast every time he's on the show.